recording? Keep it very short so that we can devote as much time from Lipiansky as possible. We have this close up here with the Gedolei Machshava of our door, and the Gedolei Musar of our door, for Shishiva of Greater Washington.
Nice, like always, to be back here. There's something very special. We had a kesher. Quite a few Silver Springers have come here, and we're here. Some of our very, very special meeting from here. It's a very, very special hagosha. The warmth of the place and the chinuch outlook of how to shape and form a person at some of his most important years. So it's just, it's a bit of a shot from the city, but I look forward to it. I want to speak about, it's the parish of Matan Torah, so which really leaves us open a big swath of areas, anything to do with Torah that pretty much is all-inclusive. But I wanted to speak more specifically about a certain bifurcation of Torah, a certain division of Torah into two areas that we need to understand. One of them especially gives us a problem, and I want to talk about it. The Chazal tell us there were a lot of fireworks going on in Matan Torah and dramatic things happening that, you know, Roim Sakolos and so on and so forth. And one of the things that it says is that they were, that Anochi and Lo Yilecha were said in one statement, one breath. Now, it's dramatic. I don't know exactly how it sounds. Chazal say Trei Kol Lo Mishtami, unless it's Chaviv. And usually that means Trei Kol, it means it's the same call. If the same Tkiah Shofar you hear from two people could be Mitzarev. Two different calls, I don't have any imagination of it. But whatever it is, it says Anochi was said in one call. Question is really why? I mean, there were enough fireworks, enough nisim and flaws going on to make the moment special. But why have Anochi Lo Yilecha as one sound, as one call? The Goyen says that there was two series. He interprets Chazal that all Asaras of Dibbis were given in one call. So that's easy to understand. That means all of Torah is one inyan. And then when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it separately, he did Anochi Lo Yilecha also in one call. Why? Chazal say the same thing by Zohar v'Shamar. That Zohar and Shamar, one look says Zohar, one look says Shamar, Tzom Shabbos, and the steer is answered by the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it one. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it as one. We can't possibly assimilate it as one. We can't possibly pick out two kolos as one kol. So the compromise is once we call it Zohar, once we call it Shamar. So if all the inyanim of all the Zohar and Shamar also comes, what's the point of that one over there? In general, the Ramban explains how all of the mitzvahs, it's not Ramban, it's the Ramban, the Talmud, explains how all the mitzvahs link back to Aseret HaDibros. Some of them are quite easy to identify, some are more far out, but everything comes back to it. And then Ramban also says that, more than that, all the mitzvahs essay the Torah come back to Anochi, and all the mitzvahs los essay come back to Lo Yir. Now, Anochi is sort of the mitzvah's essay, and the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim does actually have Anochi. He explains all the mitzvahs in terms of Achdus Hashem. The essays are there to confirm it in some way. The los essays are there to keep you away from some sort of polytheism and Avodah Zarah. Fine. But Anochi and Lo Yilecha are the pillars of two different types of mitzvahs. Anochi is the root of all mitzvahs essays, and Lo Yilecha is the root of all mitzvahs essays. I want to ask a troublesome question. a nagging question. And let's put it in words. Let's give an example. Let's say I tell somebody, you know, you're walking into a shoe store and you're buying a pair of shoes. This brand feels soft, but when you start walking on it, it sort of sticks you in the bottom of your foot and it's very uncomfortable. The other pair is much better. Fine. This suit over here, the jacket goes on well, the pants doesn't fit you all that well. Okay, makes a lot of sense. The guys manufacture the suits and the shoes, manufacture a bunch of them. For you, this is good, this is not good. Imagine you go to a tailor and you make a tailor-made suit. And you come in and the guy says, okay, it's ready. Now let me explain something. The jacket is going to fit you perfectly, the pants are not good on you. You go and make a pair of shoes. I still remember Yerushalayim, right behind the Meir Yeshiva, there was a guy who made shoes to order. It wasn't very expensive. It was like, that was the way, in those days, that was kind of part of the style of making shoes. That's how you make shoes. There was a cobbler who actually made shoes for you. And you know, you go in and you try it on, and the guy says, you know, it's going to feel soft and comfortable, but don't step hard on the backside because it has a nail in it that's going to keep hitting you. It doesn't make any sense. He's made it for you. So why would you make something that has a problem? HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyachol created the world. He created the world for us, for man, to grow, to steig, to become good, whatever it is. So it's fine. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us opportunities. And maybe we even have Yitzharas not to do the opportunities. So we're lazy a bit, we're tired, we have other things to do, distract us. And those are the impediments to doing good. That sort of sits well with us. But why would he create things that are bad for you? Whatever the low sase is, however you describe it, it's bad spiritually, something. Why would the world be full of things that are bad for you? So, you know, and technically we can say that's another way of proving your restraint. It's sometimes harder to restrain yourself. But at the end of the day, in the big picture, the world is the opportunities to accomplish. There should be all essays. When man was created, his first tzivui was an essay of eating from all the eitzim in the gan, and a losa say not to eat from the eitz hadas. So you see that's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the outset started out the Avodas Hashem, and he makes this distinction of having things that are in the Bria that are bad for you, and you're supposed to stay away from it. Well, why would you construct a Bria like that? That's really something that sort of is puzzling in this picture. One more thing I would like to point out. And I guess what we're driving at is understanding the world of los assays. Assays are easy to understand, and los assays. Chazal tell us that a person's body has ramach ivarim shasad yidin. Ramach ivarim means 248 limbs. Limbs are defined halachically different than medically. A limb in halacha is a sort of self-contained unit of a like a finger might be three limbs, because you could divide it. It has a joint and it has a bone and it has meat. It's nogea for tumas mace. Halachically, that's the status. That's what's called ivarim. So the body has 248 ivarim, and mitzvah's essay appropriately so. So it makes a lot of sense. It's each mitzvah's essay fulfills a person a certain way. It gives a person a certain specific point, and it comes together as a person. So there's a mitzvah that's connected the liver, and a mitzvah connected the kidney, and a mitzvah connected the finger, and this joint, that, whatever. Not some of it's easy to understand, some of it harder, but the picture is good. The losa says are connected something called gidim. Now, a gid halachically means, my conjecture is, a gid is connective tissue. And by what Chazal called gidim, its most common usage are sinews, which are like threads that connect the muscle to the bones, the stuff that we sew filling up with, ureas and so on. It is something which long nerves are called gidin. The aver of a zacha is called a gid in some contexts. By and large, long thready type of things in the body. There might be a long thread of fat in certain places that has a shem gid. A gid is connective tissue in the body. How does that fit with losa says? Like, you know, at least the sense of a limb fitting for an essay makes sense. A piece for a piece, each one is a specific unit. We don't always understand all of it, but at least we have that idea. But where does connective tissue fall into get of losa? So let's talk a little bit about the inyan of, I guess the point we really want to get to is getting a better sense of the role of losa in the Torah. We even find that the Torah itself, the Ramban says that the mitzvah's essays all emanate from the midah of ahava. The mitzvah's losa says all emanate from the midah of yira. And in Matan Torah itself, we find both given. We find, on the one hand, it says it was kolos abrochim by yechad kol ahar me'od, and people were scared stiff, and they were frightened, and they went back. It says that a balkeri is not allowed to learn without tevila when there was tevila Ezra, not because of tumah, but it says because Torah was given be'ema, be'yira, be'reses, be'zeya. Torah was given with an attitude of awe, and since Keri comes from Kalas Rosh, it's something that is a spirit of Torah, and the person wasn't in the right attitude, the right mindset for Torah. So Yira is incorporated as being a very, very, the key element in Matan Torah. Akash Bo gave it in a way where the person, the Kalasol jumped back and said, they can't, we're going to die if we hear it. On the other hand, the bracha that we say, one of the brachas that you can say on Torah is Avarava. If you said Avarava, and then when Mechava Birch Satorah, well, you'd say, that's one of the eights, if you're not sure about Birch Satorah, you say Avarava. So the title is Avarava. Chazal say that a Kadosh Baruch Hu, when he gave the Torah, was nidmet to a zakin. He Moli Rachman, it says. He was a zakin Moli Rachman. So Torah was given through an angle of Av and Yira. It's mashmakila Torah integrates the two together somehow. And we need to understand how two things that are seemingly opposite work in tandem. And they have to work in tandem because Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't give two Torahs. He didn't give the Torah of doing mitzvahs and the Torah of not doing averus. It's one Torah, and somewhere along the line it has to integrate together. So let's start, let's give a little bit of a mashal. Let's give it tzir. Imagine the following. Imagine I tell you, let's say I somebody's sitting here, and I show him a diamond. And he looks at it, and he says, So I say, I can rightfully say, he doesn't care for diamonds. That's easy. Let's say I show him a diamond, and he says, wow, oh, that's really, really beautiful. So, that does that show he appreciates diamonds? Well, let me answer the following. I then take out one of those rings, diamond rings that you buy. I don't know if they still have in the machines, you know, where you put in a quarter, mine is a nickel, now probably a quarter or more, and you get these rings with the pieces of stone in it, where the plastic around is probably the most expensive part of that toy. And he looks at it and says, wow, that's really beautiful. So let's go back to that appreciation of diamonds. Can I say that the person appreciates diamonds? The answer is no. Because a diamond is defined both by what it is and what it's not. A diamond is not a shining piece of mineral. It's a very specific shining piece of mineral. And we need to identify what it is and what it's not in order to properly say that. So if I then give the person the piece of shiny stone and the guy says, feh, this is trash. So now I can say the person appreciates diamonds because the diamond is what it is. It's something shining. and it's not glass and not other stuff. It's only diamond. If you want an example this way, the Gemara says something like that. The Gemara says, if you want to check a child's intelligence, and you want to know if the child is intelligent enough to halacha to be able to conduct business, so it's not bar mitzvah. If bar mitzvah is a sort of it's a rule of the thumb, and that's what we go by. But halachically, Chazal gave us a criteria. It's called Tzror Zorik Eges Venota. You give the child two things. You give him a nut of sorts, and you give him a shell or something similar. Now, if the child takes both of them, it means nothing. It means that is the child who likes to take stuff. If he takes neither of them, it's nothing. If he takes one and rejects the other, that's when you know that he has the das to be machin between two things, and that's when he's a bar das. Because the das includes both the appreciation of X and the understanding how X differs than that which is not X. So, in order for a person to deher something, in order for a person to correctly become aware of something, become conscious of something, he's going to need to have both things in place. Let's give a mashal, another mashal, closer to this idea. Let's say a person, we say, this person is a very, very spiritual person. He comes every Friday night without fail for the Suda, and he comes every Matzah Shabbos on Lava Malka, and even the Thursday night Shalom, he also comes. He's a very spiritual person. Okay. What happens if Wednesday eats out, and Tuesday eats out, and Monday eats out? Nothing. Let's say a person is a very big believer, and Shabbos he davens in shul always, but Sunday he's in the base of Tifla, and Friday he's in the other base of Tifla. That's the person is not such famous. The person is whatever it is. He's into experiences. It's not that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is defined as much by what is as by what is not. I want to say over a Ramchal. It's a very deep Ramchal. He says it in Das Tvunis. He speaks about why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically identified in terms of Echa. When we affirm HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day, we say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Then we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one, and that's our belief, and we're Moisa Nefesh on the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one. There are so many other things we say about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's all-knowing, all-powerful, all-merciful, all-everything. Why is the only one thing that we... I mean, Shema Yisrael is our statement of accepting Ol Malchus Shemayim. Why do we focus on Echad? So Ramchal says a very deep Nekuda. He says as follows. We don't have the ability to describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu in any positive terms. What does it mean HaKadosh Baruch Hu is smart? We don't have any idea of Ein Sof of Chachma. So that's meaningless. To say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is strong, we don't have the ability to describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu in those terms, because what does an Ein Sof of strength mean? Don't all those terms fall very flat? Like the halacha is, you're not allowed to add shvachim in Shemoneh Esrei because there's no end to the shvachim. So identifying HaKadosh Baruch Hu in any way would be really impossible for us. What about negative identification? I say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not stupid. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not weak. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not mean. Well, that's obvious. Not stupid, not mean, not weak is not in any way implying the positive part of it. All negatives of those don't imply anything in the way of something being positive. Colloquially, when I say somebody is not mean, I mean to say he's not terribly good, but I can't call him mean. It's not at all. So there's only one attribute of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that when I eliminate the alternatives, I've affirmed the truth. And let's explain how that works. First, a seer. When you paint a painting, let's say you want to paint a picture of somebody, you can do it in two ways. You can paint the picture of the person, or you can black out the other part of the picture, and then you have in relief, you know, like you have these black and white pictures where either or, you can paint the outside, you can paint the inside, as long as you've done one or the other, you have it. In math, for those of you who've taken math, you know that you can prove theorems either by proving it directly or by eliminating possibility. It can't be n minus anything. It can't be n plus anything. So it is n because it can't be any one of the others. You can affirm and prove something both by directly proving it and by eliminating any other possibility. Let's apply that point of Ramchal, let's say, in everyday life and get a sense of what that means. We live in a world full of Avodah Zarah. For instance, when you're sick, it's the doctor that heals you. When you need parnasa, it's the mercy of your boss that gives you a job or doesn't give you a job. And your boss is at the mercy of the economy. When you're in danger, it's the army that saves you or the police that saves you. We're surrounded with a lot of things in the world other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as a person who's a Maimon and goes through life, and he begins to realize that in reality, the best doctor can miss it if HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand is not there, the person begins to realize that, you know, it's not chachma that gives a person anything, and it's not koach. By eliminating the alternatives, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is what comes to the fore. That is the work of Hashem Echad, where we eliminate everything else, and basically Hashem Echad means only HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When I recognize how many times my plan should not have worked, and you know, my money was gambled on something that should have collapsed, and you know, and the doctor had it wrong, but still it worked, or vice versa, all the plans were in place, and it collapsed, and so on and so forth. That's when you have an affirmation of Hashem Echad by eliminating the Avodah Zarah that we normally live with. That is how he described it. Let's go back to our Indian over here. In the world of the purpose of Torah and mitzvahs, the purpose of Torah in the big picture, is a person recognize alokus in this world. A person see ruchnius in this world. The job that's supposed to be, it's supposed to be done, the way a person recognizes ruchnius is by recognizing what is good as opposed to what's not good. This is Suda Shabbos and this is Achila Gassa. By understanding why Achila Gassa is not good, I understand why Achila's mitzvah is good. Eating Achila's mitzvah is nice, but many achilas are there. When the person eliminates macholas asuras and achila gasa and affirms mitzvah, that's when he gets that sense of it. So we ask, how does HaKadosh Baruch Hu create a world that includes negative items and so many negative items? The answer is that the negative items bring out much more sharply the positive items, because we understand, by understanding what's not, we understand what is. We understand what a diamond is by liking the diamond and by understanding why a piece of cheap glass is not a diamond. The Anochi and the Lohiyah were given as Bediba Echad because they are one Dibur. It's just like when you have these three-dimensional glasses and you look at something, so the two different scenes combine themselves and you see a full picture. It doesn't remain two scenes, because the emphasis is that each one contributes to seeing a third dimension that you didn't see by looking at one or the other. Seeing the value of Torah and seeing... I once had an experience, you know, sometimes you get hit in your face when somebody tells you something and you tell the person Nitzachtani b'ni Nitzachtani, and despite the fact that you were menutzach, you learn a lesson. I'll tell you a lesson I once learned in this. I grew up from all my life, Baruch Hashem, in very positive environments, and yeshivas, and so on, and Baruch Hashem was very, very positively inspired about things. For Tkufa, I taught Neisha Torah. And there was one time one of my jobs was helping guys coming in get their schedule straight or whatever. A boy came, not a boy, he was already a person in his later 20s, came, and his story was he had become from many years before, like 4 or 5 years before, together with a brother. His brother became a superstar learning. He couldn't do that. He got very discouraged. He went back to the secular world, became secular again, and he was a very successful investment banker, lived in Manhattan, made a lot of money, and did kol davar aser, whatever investment bankers do. And we all, he was a very, very successful life. And then, for whatever reason, I mean, I don't know what reason, he decided to come back again, and so on. So he was sitting, and I was trying to work out a schedule for him. And I know he was kind of negative. He was saying, he doesn't like this, this he tried, this doesn't work, this is that. Finally, I got kind of fed up. And I made a comment maybe I shouldn't have made, but I said, you know, if you don't like anything, then why are you here? And he looked me straight in my eyes with all of his philosophical personality, and he said, Rabbi, if there would have been one thing worth staying for over there, I assure you I would not be here. I can never say that statement. You know, to me, the world is a kind of, it looks good, but it's a horror, and it's not. I never had the jarring experience to say, I can say how beautiful Beis Medrash is, but I can't tell you it's the only thing in the world. It's like Chazal say by Shlomo HaMelech, that Shlomo HaMelech in Koheles starts with Akdama. I am Shlomo ben David, king of Yerushalayim, and so on and so forth. So Chazal say he needs the introduction, because if a mashkiach yeshiva would get up and say havel aholam, the world is nothing and worthless. So you say, well, the poor mashkiach, what does he know better? You know, he's his world has been the yeshiva and it's zozishar. Of course, you know, what does he know? Somehow it says, been there, done that, seen that, had that. I assure you, nothing exists but here. There was such an impact in that statement for me, because I heard that sharp contrast in a way that I never could have experienced it. This person, by the way, is today a big mashpia, a very, very special person, and a very positive person. And is doing tremendous work. This is 25 years later, something like that. Very, very, very good person. But our component, what I'm trying to point out is, when someone's able to paint the contrast so dark, it was a lot more impressive on me. That's why Shabbos is the same thing. Shabbos is the day that has, in a certain sense, the biggest positive. It's the most ruchnistic day, and the greatest exclusion of any mundane activities. And Chazal tell us that the Zohar, the Shamar, if a person, when you makar people, Shabbos is a very, very positive experience. And for most people, Shabbos is a critical piece. It's either the first thing that took them, or it's a very critical piece in their growth. But you get someone's question, why can't you have all these wonderful things, family getting together, and zmiris, and singing, and eating, everything great? And what about those isurim, those terrible, those, that whole bag of isurim? What for? Why can't you drive, and so on and so forth? Well, try it. I mean, you should try it. But say, you ask a person, it's another activity. It's a nice thing. It's a nice place. You don't have the yichud. You don't have that sense. I was Neisha Torah, and there was a fellow came in on a Thursday night. Very impressive, very intelligent, very sensitive person, real bal nefesh. Knew very little about Yiddishkeit, grew up in a very posh home in Manhattan, actually, and walked in on a Thursday sometime. I didn't know much about him. Somebody asked me, well, why don't you have him for Shabbos? There's nothing doing here. The Shabbos, take him. So I took him to my, I lived now as a beer at the time, and we walked, I went to Davin Bayan in Gula, and I walked up in Batei Radna, whatever it is, Batei Ornstein, and I walked through the streets. And he was mesmerized. I don't think we appreciate what it means a street that's this total cessation of activity, no cars, nothing doing, and he was transfixed. And on the way back home, he grabbed my arm. He hadn't seen Zmiris, he hadn't seen Shabbos. And he says, "Thank you for sharing this world with me." And then, as we were walking close to Azabir, Shimon HaTzadik, a car drove by, and he says, "It feels as if they're desecrating something very, very holy." And, you know, I could never hear it, because, you know, yes, I low lane with Simchol Shabbos and so on, but I tuned it out. For him, the positive effect of being shavuos was something that he could hear that I couldn't hear. And you know, the Zohar and the Shomer of Shabbos are the same thing. The Kedusha Shabbos lies in the not doing in as much as the doing. I want to go back to one other point that we mentioned before, and that was the Gidin, the connective tissue. I want to try to explain that. It's a half a step deeper on the point that we started. Whenever I want to, the word tsarof in Lashon Kodesh is one of those words that has opposite meanings. There's a whole bunch of shever, sharesh, and hashrish. One of them is tsarof. Tsarof means either to attach together, like, you know, to be mitzarek to minyan, or it means to purify, which seem to be opposite meanings. Grammatically, that's okay. I mean, you have a bunch of words like that. The word, the root, shin rei shin, can mean to uproot or to root. Shever can mean to break or to give life to. It's not an uncommon phenomenon. It also makes sense. It's not so uncommon. But here there's a very special meaning. Let's take an example. I have a random crowd. I'm at, what makes the crowd in an airport random? The answer is, there's absolutely nothing that the people have in common. No one is excluded from anything. There are white people and black people and tall people and short people and these type of people, those type of people, everything and anything. I mean, I guess the only common denominator is they're flying someplace or blowing up a plane, but it has to have something to do with a plane. They're all around the area of a plane. So that is a common denominator. And if you walk into a yeshiva, what makes this a homogenous group is these are all bachurim who are coming to learn. They are of a certain age. You won't find anybody here over a certain age, under a certain age, with much less of a background, with much more of a background. It's the fact that there's a defining line. The line that connects the dots excludes everything outside of the dots as well. You define something. The word define something is to place the limits around it. So the act of bringing things together is something which also excludes. It's one and the same. If I want to have a homogeneous group, I need to select more and more. So it can't be anybody over 25, it can't be over 23, it can't be anybody under 19, it can't be 18, it can't be anybody with knowing less than Gemara or more than Tzoris, whatever it is. The connection, what takes mitzvahs and makes them one ruchnistic unit as opposed to many good things? There are people that do things at random. Such a mitzvah, they read something in the paper that was good, they do that, they do this, they do that, the other thing. What makes it one is what gets excluded. The losases are keneged the gidim because they are what gives it, it makes it a miksha achas because you've excluded out all sorts of things. Think about it. It's a little bit of a deeper point, but you understand that that's the pshat why the losases are keneged the gidim. I want to conclude, I want to bring it a little bit practically, in a more practical sense. It's easier for us, for anyone, to feel better about the positive aspects, so-called, of Yiddishkeit. We want to do, Shabbos speaks to us, Tefillin speaks to us, it's an experience. Whenever somebody wants to become frum, is miskarev, it's always miskarev through a positive area, it's because those speak to him first. we have ourselves a harder time dealing with these surim for two reasons. First of all, it's harder. You know, it doesn't seem to be any real meaning. And more than that, if we haven't done an Avera, then we haven't gone a step backwards, but we haven't gone a step forwards. It's people will do a lot more to make a dollar than to be cautious about not losing. Because a person doesn't like when the reward for his labor is not, is okay, so you didn't lose anything because of it. People will invest money in places that give more money, but not places that are safe. Because even though they like money, but the feeling that I can gain money is much more positive than the feeling, Baruch Hashem, I've invested in my bank, I only got a percent, but I didn't lose anything. People don't are not satisfied with that. So Lusa says, have that problem for us because of that. And as long as we think of them in those terms, we'll have a problem with it. Not easy. It's much, much more effective when a person realizes the positive part of it. I want to give an example that's relevant a lot. As you go out into the world, and it's no, we, our Bachem and Jingleit, you know, they, most of the vast majority of them do go into the working force. And one of the issues is they try to be zayin, not to shake a woman's hand, except under extraordinary circumstances, but without a kalter, and in an office setting, it's not difficult. You ask the steady people, it's not so difficult. But you always get asked why. Now, one fumbled way of explaining it is, well, I might have some bad thoughts about you, some unpure thoughts about you. I assure you that that answer doesn't sit terribly well with intelligent people, even with you. It's not a terribly nice answer, and it's not going anyplace, really. Let me tell you a different answer. And I told this. This is a woman came up to me at a chasana, sort of assaulted me. She didn't come to shake my hand. She just came to badger me at this. An older woman at some wedding of a Baal Tshuva. I don't remember this. I told her, listen. I said, the deepest relationship I have in the world and the strongest is with my wife. And as part of the picture is the relationship with my wife, and part of it is the excluding of the other. When you know that on the physical realm and on a deeper emotional realm, it's only you and your wife, that relationship is profound. When it's everybody, when I was growing up, it was the hippie era. So there was a joke, like a hippie asked his girlfriend, "Do you love me?" And she says, "Certainly, I love many, many people." So when you love many, many people, It says something about the quality of each particular individual. That doesn't mean a lot. When you exclude the arias, the strongest drives in a person is in the world of relationships, of those relationships. When a person excludes the stranger, then his relationship to his wife or to her husband is the most profound that there is. Both by the say tov that you do, and both by the low say of keeping the outsider out. And people understand that darn well. You know, you can, if you hold breath and say, imagine that you knew 100% that your husband would never touch anybody or get involved with somebody. Wouldn't that relationship be a lot stronger? Very few women would say no. I assure you on that one. But it's true. It's not a spiel. It is true like that. The Anokhi and Lo Yiyeh B'Diba Echad Nemru. The world of Losa says and the world of essays is a three-dimensional picture. What you have is defined by what you don't have as much as it's defined by what you do have. And when a person is Zohir in the Losa says as much as the essays, his entire Torah becomes one. He begins to understand that it's Miksha Achas, it's Tzuris Adam Tzal Malukim. And there's an image of something. He begins to see what it is, and it's harder maybe in the beginning, but in the end of it, one reinforces the other. And as we head this Shabbos in Mitzvah Hashem to the parish of Kabbalah's Torah, we should be zeicha to be mekabel Torah in its entirety. We should be mekabel d'anoch in the liya, and most important is we should understand that anochel l'giya b'tibar chadnevu. It's one is believing in God means not believing in anything else, and not believing in anything else is an affirmation of belief in God. That's love.